birthday.
Blog Talk Radio. This podcast is brought to you by the Phantom Gallery Chicago Network, an artist-run project that exhibits in non-traditional gallery settings. The Phantom Gallery looks at how the city influences art and how artists transform the city by contributing to civic dialogue and quality of life. These installations produce creative conversations. I'm your host, Alpha Bhutan. Thank you for listening. Good morning and welcome to another creative conversation. Today we have on the line Elena Gonzalez, PhD. Hi, Elena.
Hi, Elsa. Thank you so much for having me today.
Great.
Should I go ahead and introduce myself?
Sure. Why don't you introduce yourself?
So I am an independent scholar and curator working here in the Chicago area, and I have a new book out called Exhibitions for Social Justice, which talks about the ways that we can use the space inside the gallery to work for the equitable distribution of risks and rewards in society.
So you want to kind of tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, absolutely. I spoke with roughly 80 museum professionals, and I wrote about more than 20 institutions in the Americas and Europe, looking at the different ways that we can use that space in the gallery when we're working for social justice. And I kind of came out with four main mechanisms for doing this kind of work. The first being helping visitors to build empathy and then parlay that empathy into solidarity among groups, which is really necessary for making change, as we've sort of been seeing recently. And then helping visitors to build long, strong memories so that their experience in the museum can affect them for a long time after the fact. And then inspiring visitors to take action, which could be before the visit, during the visit, after the visit, or even sometimes decades after the visit, and then the overall institutional context that the work takes place in, because that can be just as important, right? The way that an institution treats its staff, treats its neighbors, treats its visitors can really enable or disable curatorial work for social justice as well.
You know, that's I think that's a broad topic, and it's really interesting how you're looking at the visitor experience in your and from this perspective in your research. But what I want to do real quickly is go back and talk about your trajectory and what led you to this this place and to create this type of narrative and produce this kind of research in your own trajectory of where
Absolutely.
You are as a. Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, I've always loved museums ever since I was a little girl. I grew up in this area going to all the big and small museums, and I always wanted to be a part of that. And it was kind of an eye-opener for me when I was working on a history project in high school, actually. I was learning about the Field Museum here in Chicago and how there was this big divide between the, major funders who really just kind of wanted to put their name on this big ticket project and the people who were actually working in the museum at that time doing all of the museum professionals doing all of the work whose passion was really going into this. And I started to think about how museums could make change, and then many years later I went to work for the National Museum of Mexican Art, and I was allowed to curate the first project that I worked on, and it was a project having to do with social justice, and I started to see that what I had been studying and learning about could actually happen. Curatorial work for social justice was this idea that I had kind of in a dream. I hoped it would be possible, but I started being able to actually do it as part of their African Presence in Mexico project. And so working on that really was a turning point for me, seeing that this work was possible, and then I began learning about lots of other types of institutions that were doing it in different ways, and I decided that I wanted to make that type of work the focus of my doctorate. So that's what I did. And, you know, I think a lot of people who write a dissertation realize that they aren't able to write what, you know, they aren't able to take on the scope that they want to take on in that dissertation project. They really need to write a book once they've gotten that dissertation kind of out of their system. So the book is that book, I guess you could say.
So the book that you just produced now that's on the shelf, I have a copy of, and I did attend the openings during that time when the Mexican Museum, National Museum of Mexican Art presented. And they also, there was a collaboration with other art galleries and museums in Chicago that featured parts of that exhibit. So I got one of the books, the catalogs from that show. And that was like,
oh, yeah, that was a fantastic catalog. Pardon?
It was about, what, 15 years ago? How long ago?
It was 2006 when that came out, and then it toured for 5 years after that, nationally and internationally. And the tech, the catalog that you mentioned, I actually really like because it's a different way of doing a catalog than you see in most exhibitions. It's really more of a textbook about this, you know, big chapter of Mexican history that really was intentionally swept under the rug for a very long time.
Exactly. There's a lot of conversations. When I think I mentioned 20 years ago, I was in California at the time in the University of Davis, and they were having a series of summits and conversations on, you know, because, you know, on that whole topic, you know, of the African presence in Mexico. And so it was these big dialogues that were happening. So when I came here to Chicago and the same conversation was happening, you know, I think that it's, you know, now we're here at this point of Latinx, you know, where we can have broader conversations and you know, and not be compartmentalized in that whole tier system. You understand?
Yes,
so
definitely.
So moving forward, you know, I'm trying to connect your trajectory of how I'm meeting you now on this platform, and you're part of the curatorial committee at the Evanston Arts Center. And what brought you here, you know, to serve on the curatorial committee?
Well, it's kind of a confluence of life things for me. I'm originally from Evanston, and when I was finishing up my doctorate, I moved back to Evanston. I had two children, and when my daughter, my youngest, was born about 5.5 years ago, I was looking for a way to remain involved with curatorial work for social justice, looking for a place where I could use my skills, contribute to what was going on in the community, even though I wasn't ready to take on, you know, a full-time job in a museum with my new baby at home and my little 3-year-old son at home as well. And so I looked to the Evanston Art Center as a place where maybe I could do that. And I was very, you know, upfront with my desire to use it as a laboratory to see what we could do in terms of curatorial work for social justice. And they were very open to that. And it has been a great partnership. I've been delighted to work with the center. It's a great organization, and we've been really working on making a lot of changes there to make it the best that it can be and to really cause it to serve the entire area and all of Evanston, where, you know, for many years it has a long history. It's 90 years old, and for many years it was just viewed as this really, like, rich white North Shore type of place, but there's so much more that goes on there. All of the exhibitions are free. No one is turned away from their classes for inability to pay. It really is a place with open doors, and especially now in our new space, it's a place that we're really working to make as welcoming as we possibly can, and I'm happy to be a part of it.
So, you know, and thank you for that, because the next question I'm asking you is, I'm kind of really curious about how the conversation came about for the Curatorial Fellowship, which that's what I'm currently the first fellow that you, you know, have brought on under the Curatorial Committee. And so how did those discussions begin with?
Yeah, I'm so glad you brought that up, Alpha, and we're so excited to have your project on board as our first Curatorial Fellowship. It's really an honor for the center, and it's going to be, I think it's going to be a fantastic way to just bring some interesting and exciting work around during a time that people really need that nourishment. To answer your question about the Curatorial Fellowship, I've been with the center for about 5 years, 5.5 years, and ever since I came on board, I've been pushing for different changes. And one of the things that has recently enabled us to make a big statement from the point of view of the Exhibitions Committee about you know, where we need to be headed as an institution and what specific steps we need to take is a new strategic plan that the Evanston Art Center came out with in the last, I mean, I guess it was about 18 months ago. Basically, this was the first strategic plan that we were able to pass as a board where it really put a fine point in goal one of the strategic plan that welcoming people of all backgrounds was our first order of business. And we realized that there is not only an image problem around the center, but also a history of unintentional exclusion that has permeated the position of the center in the community. And so one of the things that, you know, my committee has really wanted to do is make sure that what we're showing on the walls, the artists who we're including, and the topics that we're talking about are all resonant throughout Evanston, which we're fortunate to live in an extremely diverse community, although also very segregated. So one of the things that we've done is evaluate, you know, what we have been showing. And we actually have learned interesting things. Like, we show a lot more women than men, for example. We do show artists of color. We do show artists of all abilities. We do show artists who are fluid in their gender or who come from different places. But we noticed right away that, you know, overall, the whiteness of the center was something we could start to focus on and start to change, right? Like, we need to move away from this centered whiteness. And so one of the things we wanted to do was start a program could really demonstrate by us putting, like, our modest, very modest curatorial budget that we have, putting the majority of that toward bringing in professionals who can bring different points of view, tell different stories that who are, you know, museum professionals of color, curators of color, who want to come and work in the center and be part of this project to increase our reach, open our doors, start new conversations, make ourselves more welcoming, and just speak across divides that have been, you know, that we have not been bridging like we should for many decades. So we were very eager to start this project with your program, and we sort of thought of it as a thing that would initially focus on curators of color, but ideally in a future that may be years and years down the road when we feel like we have a really great working relationship with lots of curators of color, that we can start to branch out as well and address other areas where we may not be reaching communities that are, you know, we may not be reaching communities at the level that they are represented in Evanston. That's really, we would like for the center to look like Evanston, you know, because that's
right.
Where it is,
there's
and that's
a
primary
demographic
population.
Yeah, there was a demographic shift that has happened in Evanston. When I was putting my proposal together, I did look at that shift, you know, in terms of population and demographics. And, you know, and I think I did quote that in my proposal. So it was just interesting doing the research before I even put the proposal together of what's happening in Evanston. So, you know, again, thank you guys for putting that strategic plan together. And, you know, we're, like I said, we're the inaugural year, and we're looking at exciting year of 2021 with bringing programming and we'll and finalizing our creative conversations and art talks so that they they happen next summer in the installation that myself and Adiro, not the co-curator, are putting together. So my next question for you is that, you know, we talked about your role as a committee member and what began your curatorial practice and also your interest in serving as a committee member. You know, the question I want to press here is ways that artists examine the state of our environment and what is the intersection of art and social justice as seen in the practice of curators. And you kind of alluded to that when you talked to about the your role, you know, in your publications and your research and your role as a Mexican
at the National Museum of Mexican Art.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's it. I was looking for the whole name. So, can you talk about
I
how
think
artists
that's
other-
a very I think it's a very important topic because I feel like artists really, I know that artists have something unique to add in terms of how we make narratives, how we process those narratives, and how we live with those narratives, whether they be histories or stories, throughout our lives. And as a curator, I'm thinking of the many media that artists work in as special tools in the gallery. There are many different roles that they can play. In particular, a couple of the things that I like to highlight, artists produce work that can help us think about and speak about the unthinkable or the unspeakable, things that ordinarily are very difficult for us to get our heads around or discuss in conversation. They're sometimes present in artwork in a way that allows us different types of access to those topics. And actually, artists can sort of vault us into the inside of a topic that might be very controversial or might contain a lot of debate normally and might, you know, if it were introduced with words instead of with visual art, might be something that really just prompted more friction. But one example is the cover of my book is actually a picture of a foosball table, which is a work of art called Copa Inmigración from a show called A Declaration of Immigration at the National Museum of Mexican Art. And it's by Juan and Ricardo Compeán, who are brothers. And this foosball table features these two different sides, right? The Mexican migrants and their allies and the sort of Border Patrol, ICE, multinational corporations, the other side, right? And without having a lot of words to introduce you to the subject, you can look at the piece and you can immediately start to think about the topic of immigration, but because you're not necessarily working with words, your guard is down and you're not in a combative stance about it, even though the piece is actually about combat because it's a foosball table, so it's about the game of soccer also. So that is sort of one area of special one special area that artists contribute to. Another is creating environments that engage the senses. And in doing so, as we take part in maybe immersive installations that engage our senses, those experiences help us build memories of our time in a museum or in a gallery. And those memories can in turn inspire us to take action. Most importantly, the memories can cause us to better remember other content that was part of the exhibition. So if we're learning about, you know, domestic workers, and we're having an emotional experience, which is also a physical experience, or we're having an experience moving our body through the space in a certain way, we will actually have a better memory, a more complete memory of our visit and of the content relating to the topic at hand, which in that case was domestic workers. So I think artists have just an incredible amount to add to the curator's toolbox and to the whole conversation.
Thank you for that. Great answer. While you were saying that, I was thinking about my own experiences of engagement and what shows exhibitions are more powerful and the ones that linger in my memory. And then those are the ones that are sensory and that I have a takeaway from that. Definitely right in that perspective. Today, the words curate and curator are being widely used and hotly debated. Are we all curators? And what does that mean to create a collection, exhibition, or a website? And before we began the conversation, I said to you that I went to your website and kind of explored your page, and I felt that it was, really, really well curated. Do you care to comment?
That's so nice of you to say, Alpha, because I feel like I have so much work to do on the website and I just don't have the time right now. But I think that in some ways, yes, we are all curators, but I want to go a little bit more deeply into that. Curate, the word, comes from curare in Latin, to care for. And so curating isn't only about choice. It's not the same as editing, for example, which many of us do in many capacities. But I think that curating is also about stewardship. And increasingly, that stewardship isn't only about stewarding and protecting objects in a collection, but also about our relationships and ideas and stories and histories. These are all things that, museum curators or library curators are taking care of. So when we think about those other elements of curatorial work, we do each of those in our own lives as well in different ways, right? We care for the relationships in our families, in our professional networks, in our communities, maybe faith groups. We care for familial and community stories that we, maybe personal stories or cultural stories that we pass down to the next generation. And we care for ideas. And right now we're actually living through a moment when a lot of people are trying their best to care for their ideas about what the nation can and should be through their participation in the electoral process, for example. So I think there are lots of ways that that idea of care filters into our lives that are not about, placing objects on a wall, although we certainly do that too.
Exactly. So with that, we're talking about beyond collection work. Today's curator engages the community by fostering civic, social, cultural dialogue of ideas and creativity through public examination, interaction, research, interpretation, and exhibition of art, science, and humanities collections. So when I in the community, and people are saying, I'm a curator. And I'm like, okay, really? And then we get into the dialogue of, are you a producer of cultural art and experiences? Are you really, you have a tag of being a, what do you call yourself, a museumologist? A curologist.
I call myself a curatoriologist because I do curatorial work, but I also study curatorial work. So I'm a curatoriologist.
Great. And so that's why, and I'm like, when people are that are producers of a cultural experience and they don't really understand what work really goes behind the curatorial world, in which we live in, I just think it's important that we as curators really have these conversations with these younger curators who are coming in and defining themselves. And then there's a whole nother curatorial world now of online curation, with the ways we're presenting virtual spaces. And so it's just really interesting. And I'm very much I lead conversations to new and emerging curators, you know. And again, thank you. That was a great definition for what curate and to curate means.
Sure.
Recently, actually in June, I attended the American Alliance of Museums National Conference. And with that conference, they had a curatorial, you know, committee that met, and they talked about the activities and the core functions of museums, namely the research, interpretation, collection management, meaning documentation and conservation, and communication, meaning exhibitions, education, and public programming. Curatorial practice refers to the methodologies and professional standards grounding these activities. So I always kind of go back to that kind of explanation and look at, you know, how it reflects powers of relationships that we're building in the curatorial world. You care to comment?
Yes. Yes. I mean, so one of the ideas that I was getting at earlier is that our curatorial work today is much more about fostering and building long-term relationships than it is about narrow expertise with a few objects. But, I mean, that being said, objects are very important, collections are very important, and our research into them supports our ability to tell stories and make and share knowledge. Not only that, it's important to bring diverse collections into conversation with one another. But then I think about, like, as my mother used to say, people are more important than things. So when we're doing curatorial work, and this kind of goes back to Michael Ames, this is not a new idea, but we have to ask ourselves, what good is this work doing and for whom? So the narratives that we present in exhibitions are always intersecting with conversations about things like race, class, gender, sexuality, ability, and it's up to us whether we bring those topics to the fore or not. So I believe that we should, and that when we do, we as curators are actually doing our best to work toward a society where risks and rewards are distributed more equally, or more, not more equally, more equitably is the word that I'm looking for. So I think it's a good idea to use those collections and use those relationships to knit together stories that support many different people, both in a single exhibition and in a single exhibition that maybe brings people together, and in separate exhibitions that constantly shift who's at the center of the narrative. And that gets to a lot of the different areas of work that you're hearing about in the conference. You know, I think a lot of times it's very common, and this is why I focused on curatorial work in my book and in my own study, it's very common that a museum will deal with a subject and then take anything that seems political or controversial or opinionated off to the side to public programs. But the two things I don't think should be separated. I think they are part of a whole, and I think that taking ownership of those points of view is a very important part of museum work today.
Well, thank you. We just have like maybe a minute left and 90 seconds left. Is there anything that you want to add? What's next for you? And where can we see more of your work?
Well, you can find my work on my website, elenagonzalez.org, and on Twitter at curatoriologist. I would love it if you would read my book, Exhibitions for Social Justice. Obviously, you've read it, Alpha, but other listeners. Next, I am working on the intersection of racial exploitation and environmental exploitation and how those two things are intertwined historically and in the present, which is to say, you know, sort of the intersection of racial injustice and climate injustice, very deeply intermeshed. And I'm also working on a digital anthology with some colleagues called Museums and Civic Discourse, which is going to be published by Greenhouse Publishing out of University of Connecticut. We're pretty excited about that project as well. Yeah, and I'm homeschooling my children. It's a wild ride.
Well, thank you.
This podcast is brought to you by the Phantom Gallery Chicago.
Thank you so much.
An artist-run project that exhibits in non-traditional gallery settings. The Phantom Gallery looks at how the city influences art and how artists transform the city by contributing to civic dialogue and quality of life. These installations produce creative conversations. I'm your host, Alpha Bhutan. Thank you for listening.